The yeas are 220. The nays are 213. The Build Back Better bill is passed.
There were cheers from Democrats and silence from Republicans this morning as President Biden's big social spending and climate change bill passed in the House. But it sure was a bumpy ride. Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy delayed the vote with an 8.5-hour stem winder slamming the Democrats' expansive agenda. When he finally gave up talking at about 5 o'clock this morning, it was Nancy Pelosi's turn. The House Speaker joked that her remarks would be brief.
Following the vision of President Biden, guided by the expertise and energy of our chairs, members, and staff, we have built back better bill that is historic, transformative, and larger than anything we have ever done before.
And now this bill faces a treacherous Senate, which brings us to our Friday politics roundtable. Scott Wong covers House leadership for The Hill and has a nice name like somebody I know. Hi, Scott.
How you doing? Thanks.
I'm great. And Francesca Chambers covers the White House for McClatchy. Francesca, good to have you.
Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you. To the spending bill, total of nearly $2 trillion. That will be for paid family leave, expanded child care, expanded Medicare, subsidies for green cars. It got zero Republican votes. Here's Florida GOP House member Kat Kamick.
As the member designated by Mr. Loudermilk of the state of Georgia, I inform the House that Mr. Loudermilk will vote hell no on H.R. 5376, a.k.a. Build Back Broke, and good luck in the Senate. And with that, I yield back.
Scott, those are the Republicans. As far as the Democrats in the House, some of them were worried about the price tag of this and potentially stoking inflation. In the end, what brought them on board?
Well, this bill is chock full of priorities that they had promised voters and that President Biden had promised voters from their campaign in 2020. And in their mind, they have delivered, albeit, you know, it now faces a difficult road in the Senate, as you pointed out. Mm-hmm. But this is focused on, you know, things like universal preschool, funding for child care, elder care, extending child tax credits, climate initiatives. The list goes on and on. And it really is a remarkable feat for the House Democrats to get all of these 220 members on the same page, marching in the same direction. We saw this fight play out between the warring moderate and progressive factions for months and months. It was ugly. Mm-hmm. The sausage making is not pretty. But in the end, yeah, Nancy Pelosi was able to rally her troops and get it through the House.
Now, they were watching closely for how this would be scored, which I guess is Beltway speak for, you know, the official numbers as far as whether it would add to the deficit. That came late yesterday. Was that an important piece of all this, Scott?
Yeah, it was. In fact, you know, moderates had been withholding their votes, a handful of moderates, and essentially blocking the bill until that CBO score came out. You know, what it showed was that it will add to the deficit by more than $300 billion over the decade, but it doesn't account for key IRS provisions. Basically, they're bulking up the IRS. And the White House has argued that when you factor in the IRS provisions with tougher enforcement for those tax collectors, it actually will cut the deficit. So that's an argument that a lot of moderates actually are buying. And I think that helped a lot of those moderates get on board with the steep spending price of this bill.
All right. Now, Francesca, this bill now heads to the Scylla and the Charybdis of the Senate, where there's no guarantee. What might the Democrats have to add or subtract to try to get the votes they need?
Well, things that they could have to subtract would be paid family and medical leave that's in the House version 4 weeks. That's something that is likely to be cut in the Senate in order to get the vote of Senator Joe Manchin. Another thing with regards to the state and local tax deduction, the House would like to lift that cap up to $80,000 from $10,000. And in the Senate, that is something that senators, including Bernie Sanders, have said that they just can't get behind. They do not want to have a wealthy giveaway. But there could be a middle ground on that that would satisfy both those moderate House members and it would satisfy some of the more progressive senators. Because the key thing here is that if the Senate changes anything, and we expect they'll change several things, that even once they pass it, it'd have to pass again in the House. And then in the Senate, they have to pass the same version of that before we'd even see it get to President Biden's desk for his signature.
So far from over. Let's go back just for a moment here to Kevin McCarthy and his marathon speech last night. Let's listen to some of it. Here's how he started.
Let me be clear. Never in American history has so much been spent at one time.
Here he is about halfway through, 4 hours later.
If America asked me what went wrong, one-party rule for one term.
And then at about 5 a.m, he wrapped up.
This is a tipping point. This is a point of not coming back from.
So, Francesca, quite a display of, speaking there for many hours. Before this happened, I didn't even know the House had its own kind of filibuster, or what they call it, a magic minute, I guess it's called in the House. What do you think Kevin McCarthy was trying to achieve with that speech?
Well, just prior to this, I was speaking to a senior GOP aide who indicated that while part of the intention was to delay the vote and slow it down, that more of the intent was to tell the American people about what's inside of it, because they are looking at polling that to them suggests that if Americans knew what these provisions are and what they did, that they might not be as supportive. Of course, advocates in favor of the bill, Democrats, think that the more that they tell people what's in the bill, that Americans will support it. But Republicans think that by spending all of that time explaining all of these provisions that Americans might not know were in there would be helpful. So less about the fact that it would keep it from being passed, it eventually was, and more about using their time to try and go on the record about some of these provisions that they're against.
Scott, sticking with Republicans, let's talk for a moment about Paul Gosar. This is the Republican House member from Arizona, censured by the House this week for tweeting out an anime video, a doctored anime video, showing him killing Democrat Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. As a result of this vote, he lost committee assignments. He was unrepentant publicly, by the way. What do you make of this punishment, given that it really could be all reversed if Republicans just take back the House in the next election?
Well, that's right. Democrats were waiting for Republicans to act to punish Gosar for what I think almost all of us believe is pretty, pretty disgusting stuff. And Republicans stood by Gosar, including Kevin McCarthy, saying, look, he took the video down. He said it wasn't his intent to promote violence, and we take him at his word. Well, that wasn't good enough for the Democrats, and they quickly reacted and stripped him of his committee assignments and also censured him, making him the first lawmaker in more than 10 years since Charlie Rangel to be censured on the House floor. But McCarthy at a press conference said that if and when Republicans take back power in 2022, he will put both Gosar and Marjorie Taylor Greene, who was also stripped of her committee assignments earlier this year, back on committees, and said they have a right to serve. And so, under Republican rule, there really would be no sort of consequences. It's interesting because Republicans in recent years have been targets themselves of political violence. Think back to Steve Scalise almost losing his life in that mass shooting at a congressional baseball practice in 2017.
Mm-hmm. Francesca, let's talk about another House member. This week, the Wyoming Republican Party voted to stop recognizing Congresswoman Liz Cheney as a Republican, seeking to boot her out of the party in the state because of her criticism of former President Trump. Mind you, she is one of the most conservative members of the House. What is this telling us about either the state of Wyoming or the broader Republican Party now?
Well, when you look at the broader Republican Party, you also have Illinois Rep. Adam Kinzinger, who is not going to be running for re-election, and that is more based on redistricting in his state and how that was going to come down. But the point being that they have been two of the most, if not the most, vocal Republicans on Capitol Hill against the former president. And they both voted for impeachment as well the second time around. And so when you look at that, you have one that's leaving that would leave her currently as the sole Republican who speaking of the Gosar vote, voted for censure as well, left standing on Capitol Hill. And that really tells you something about where the Republican Party is and where where it could potentially be going in the next Congress.
Okay. And quick minute, a quick topic. This morning, the president went for his first annual physical in office. Francesca, I understand this was a bit of a surprise to reporters. Why?
Well, the White House issued guidance this morning that the president would be undergoing this. But importantly, what was surprising about it is that because he had a colonoscopy, that he transferred power to Vice President Kamala Harris for more than an hour, making her technically the first woman president in American history. So making history today.
History was made indeed. Francesca Chambers, White House correspondent for McClatchy, and Scott Wong, senior staff writer at The Hill. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.